Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Last month, I had a very provocative, articulate guest, Dr. Susan Block, author of The Bonobo Way, The Evolution of Peace Through Pleasure. And Dr. Block, Dr. Susie, as she's often known, has returned to the program. Welcome, Dr. Susie.
I'm happy to be back.
Well, you thought the show was only 20 minutes when we spoke off the air.
Right, it went so fast.
It's 60 minutes or close to it. And so it just shows that we had a pretty easy conversation about your book and about bonobos and their lifestyle and
swinging.
Swinging.
So
and we're going to talk about bonobos, and their swinging, and humans and their swinging, and more. I gave the wrong website last time. I said bonoboville.com,
Wrong. It's just Bonoboville, is my social media site, our community site.
Right.
And The Bonobo Way is a book that, of course, is kind of the manifesto of Bonoboville. And there is a section on creating your own Bonoboville or joining a Bonoboville, joining our Bonoboville. There are many types of Bonobovilles around the world, some directly inspired by the bonobos, and some I just think are bonobo-esque. Mm-hmm. From swing houses to women's centers, so that's what Bonoboville is. But to get the book directly, it's thebonoboway.com.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'll make sure that when I do the summary after the show that I get it right, so we don't have to go back and change
it. Or you can just go to Amazon and type in The Bonobo Way, or even just Bonobo. There aren't that many books on bonobos.
I know.
Aren't any others that are about how humans can live lives inspired by bonobos and make peace through pleasure.
Yes, and your book addresses all of this in such provocative, fantastic way.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And we mentioned that you are a Yale graduate and very intelligent. And of course, you've had graduate work since then, I'm going to presume. I don't know too much about it, but.
Absolutely. One of my PhDs is from the Institute for the Advanced Study of Human Sexuality.
Right, in San Francisco, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, good. So you, in your book, you weave stories and studies and theories and fantasies. And so all of these things can help people reading the book release one's inner bonobo if that's what they want to do, if they have the courage, the confidence to do it. And you had told me in our pre-interview for today that that lots of people did listen to the archived version of our show a month ago on the 28th of July.
And they're all ears for part two today.
Oh, good. Yes. You know, that's why I've been doing media. I had my own show for 5 years when I lived in Hawaii, and I actually went to a radio studio there. And this is internet radio, but it's still... We get to call it more than just a podcast because it is live, and people could call in if they want.
Oh, really? Oh,
yes,
wow! I didn't know that.
We'll
have to do this. We'll have to do a part three where I really.
Oh, we will do a part three. Yeah,
because I just told them they have to be passive and listen. I didn't give out a phone number.
Yeah,
but why don't we give out the phone number? What is it?
Well, we can just in case anybody's listening live, and it's the same number that you and I call in to PRN. Hopefully, I didn't check this out with our producer. We need to have a producer there to get the calls, but it's 888-874-4888. And we will do a part three and make it known, and I'll make sure that I have coverage on the PRN side of things so that they can answer the phone. And you know how people could get even more inspired to call in? Is that the first caller... would get a free copy of your book, The Bonobo Way, The Evolution of Peace Through Pleasure.
Well, now I think I can arrange that.
Oh, good. I thought. You're such a generous person. Dr. Susie is a lot of fun, and we've known each other. We were really formally introduced about 12 years ago, 11 years ago, but before that, as I mentioned in the last show, we were separately on Bob Berkowitz's program on CNBC.
Great show.
Yeah, it was.
Especially back then when there was not too much else out there in terms of sex information in the media in the 1990s.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Pre-big time internet.
And now there's an explosion.
Yes.
All part of in touch with our bonobo-esque side. You know, humans are closely related to bonobos and to common chimps.
Yeah.
We've always used this killer ape paradigm, and now we're opening up to our sexuality, our empathy, our bonobo side.
The bonobo side. And so give people, we did this last time, but there are some new listeners this time, so what are some of the really wonderful features about bonobos, who are a close relative to humans?
Absolutely. And you really should listen to part one if you want to get more of a gist. But basically, the book is, you know, about just what do these great apes know about sex and the rest of life that we don't. What do the bonobos know? And here are a few things we know about bonobos. One, they're very close to humans. Like I said, common chimps and bonobos share almost 99% of our DNA. And even if you don't believe in genetics, you can just look into a bonobo's eyes and just feel as though you're looking at a living version of the missing link. They are very, very close to us. Two, bonobos have a lot of sex. We'll get into that more. But they're both into quality and quantity, and this is a very, very important part of their culture.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And not everybody that writes and talks about bonobos likes to get into the sex for obvious reasons, but it is a very key aspect of all the other good things that they do. One of those things is number three, bonobos empower the females much more than any other great ape, whether we're talking common chimps or gorillas or orangutans or humans. You know, the males are in charge. But among bonobos, the females are very powerful. I mean, they are even kind of in charge. And you could say the older females are especially in charge. That's why I say MILFs rule Bonoboville. Gently
but
firmly.
Right,
which
and
keeps
you point
the bonobo
out
males
that
gentle and
that,
firm.
What? I'm sorry.
I was just saying one of my little memes about Bonoboville. MILFs rule Bonoboville, gently but firmly.
Rule. Yes,
which keeps bonobo males gentle and firm.
Yes, good.
Anyway, everybody seems to be pretty happy, including these kind of less powerful males, but they have a lot of power in terms of they get laid regularly, and that is certainly a very nice thing.
Leads to number four. They stay younger longer.
Exactly.
They're having so much sex.
Yes. From having all that sex, from being peaceful, from the less stress in their lives, and the males are less stressed, especially, so they especially stay younger longer. Common chimps as babies start out just as cute and youthful as bonobos, but with age they quickly turn into these grumpy old apes. And bonobos, especially the males, seem to sip from an eternal fountain of youth.
Number five
is the most important thing we know about bonobos.
Yes.
They have never been seen killing each other in the wild or captivity.
Never.
They make
never
peace through pleasure. Not so far. Now, like I keep saying, this is not all about genetics. This is very cultural. This is why I think humans can learn from bonobos. I don't think genes are total destiny. They're part of our destiny. And bonobos don't kill each other because they've established this culture. But I don't know, if humans keep putting guns into their hands or other weapons, I guess they'll learn how to shoot one. I hope we don't. I hope before we do that, we learn how to make peace through pleasure from them.
Yes. And it's important. And I just a little aside on they're looking younger because they have a lot of sex. It might be a good time to inject some of the health benefits of sex for humans.
Absolutely.
And the one that I love most is in 2010, Brazil's Minister of Health made a very surprising recommendation. He encouraged Brazilians to have sex 5 times a week.
Really?
As a countermeasure to the nation's hypertension epidemic. So having a lot of sex is really good for heart health.
Well,
really,
you bet.
Really good. And
that's
isn't
true.
That a wonderful statistic?
Cardio.
So I would like a follow-up on that to find out if the nation's, if there was some follow-through on it and if the nation's hypertension rate went down some. But, you know, we do know you have a longer life. There's a lot of studies to show about that. This is all humans. And there's even less cancer for people that have a lot of sex. Pain relief.
Mm-hmm.
Reduced
Absolutely.
Stress.
Absolutely. You can also, you know, use it as a decongestant, at least temporarily.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
It does clear up your sinuses.
Uh-huh.
At least,
and, of course, the oxytocin release during
orgasm,
sex.
If you can get yourself into that pre-orgasmic state and stay there for a while, it completely clears up your sinuses.
Isn't
Great
that
to do when you have a cold
know.
Just before an interview.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Anyway.
And then the oxytocin release during sex can lead to more relaxation and sounder sleep.
Absolutely.
And improved sleep.
The best sleeping pill. An orgasm. Mm-hmm. It's just tension, tension, tension. Relax.
Right. Mm-hmm. And we know that improved sleep for humans leads to reduced body weight and lots lower stress, increased immunity. So there are just so many benefits.
Many, many reasons to release your inner bonobo.
Yeah. So let's. So you talk about this in various places in your book, but I'm looking at chapter 15, Release Your Inner Bonobo, and you start out with a quote from Marilyn Monroe. Sex is part of nature. I go along with nature.
Yes.
That was,
yes, yes. I mean, you know, she did, and she was, I don't know. She had some plastic surgery, but, yeah, she was very into nature and part of the bonobo way is going with nature, is discovering your erotic evolutionary connection with bonobos and all of nature, your ecosexual connection. And by the way, that is a book now, Ecosexuality, that I highly recommend. I happen to have written the foreword to it, and it's out now, all about how to connect ecosexually with the earth. So,
and you wrote
yes.
the foreword, and it's and who's the author?
The co-editors are Dr. Serena Anderlini, also called Serena Gaia, and Lindsay Hageman. And lots of wonderful ecosexual writers are in it, including our friend Dr. Annie Sprinkle and Dr. Veronica Monet. Lots of wonderful Gabriela Cordova is in it. A lot of great writers.
And the book is, say it again, and I'll look it
it's
up and put it in the summary.
It's called Ecosexuality, How Nature Inspires the Arts of Love.
Okay.
And, it touches upon all different aspects of nature and how we can orgasm with a radish or just walking through a forest is like a pornographic movie. It's got a lot of great ideas for connecting with nature ecosexually. Mixing the eco, the ecology movement with the sex positive movement is a lot of what it's about politically.
Yeah. Well, it's a book whose time has come.
Absolutely. And I think it might be actually free today on Amazon. They're doing some free giveaways. So get out there and get your ecosexuality.
Yeah, good.
And your bonobo way. And yeah, the first part of the bonobo way is really about the bonobos and why they're so wonderful. And the second part is about how to release your inner bonobo using the 12 steps to liberating your inner bonobo. And, of course, this is not your typical 12-step program.
No, it's not. It's not at all. I like how you write about this, that you may resonate to the bonobo way of bisexuality, female solidarity, athletic physicality, deep compassion, curiosity, generosity, reciprocity, their appealing usefulness, the way they swing or combine food with sex, the sense of play that infuses almost everything they do, and mainly, I say a little bit more, and mainly making peace through pleasure.
Yes.
So those are some amazing qualities. And so if people can hope to emulate some of these qualities and then also release some of their more kinky desires in the process, then they're going to be really following the bonobo way and releasing their inner bonobo, wouldn't you say?
I would certainly say.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these qualities are qualities that a lot of conventional experts would say are a result of our particularly human culture, such as female solidarity, which, you know, maybe you don't see in most other primate species, but you do see it in bonobos. Such as generosity, which a lot of people say, hey, that you know, you have to be told to be generous. You know, humans are naturally selfish. And, yeah, there is a selfish side to our humanity. But there's also a side to us that really feels good by doing good. It isn't something we have to be forced to do. It's something we might have to be taught how to do in ways that fit in our culture, but it's not something that goes against our nature. And I think that the bonobos really bring this out. I think other animals do, too. All the species kind of have something to teach us. But bonobos are so, so very close to us. It's like they are a wake-up call to our natural generosity and reciprocity, our compassion, and our kinky sexuality. You know, a lot of people think, hey, we should accept kink, but it's a little weird. It's not really what nature wants us to do. But you can see among the bonobos, they're very kinky, so why shouldn't we be?
Which will lead us into exploring the way they swing more than just from the trees and also BDSM. But I think talking about generosity and reciprocity, In human sexuality, generosity definitely breeds reciprocity. You're generous with your lover, and your lover just can't help if the relationship is healthy, can't help but be generous back. And you might even do it, to use the Yiddish term, you might be giving a mitzvah. You don't necessarily expect anything back, but you get it back.
You get it back immediately. I mean, it's not even something you have to wait for in sex. When your lover has an orgasm that comes about partially because of what you're doing, it feels so good. Everybody knows that. And yet we have all these ideas about how natural selfishness is and how we have to force ourselves to be good to each other. But if we are good, we learn that it does feel good. If you give, you get. The power to give pleasure is the greatest power we have.
It is. And then for the men who have developed some tantric abilities to have dry orgasms and not ejaculate, then they can plug into the woman's multiple orgasms and have an amazing energy kind of orgasm. So
yeah,
that you're riding high on ecstasy.
Speaking of something positive that comes out of what you might think is negative, a lot of men, of course, need to get their prostate removed for whatever reason when they get older.
Mm-hmm.
And then their orgasm no longer ejaculates.
Yeah.
And they can have a crisis of masculinity over this. Like, oh, my God, they associate ejaculation so much with orgasm. But if they just go through the same motions that they always do to have an orgasm, they will
mm-hmm.
experience very often an even deeper orgasm without ejaculation. And they also find that they can have those multiple orgasms that are usually the province of women.
Yes, and even if a man does have his prostate, he can learn to do this.
He can certainly learn.
Mm-hmm.
He can certainly learn, although, you know, it's a challenge.
It's a challenge, but anyway, I don't want to go too far afield, but the generosity thing is so important, and the compassion of these bonobos. Could we just digress for a moment, and would you tell the listening audience how you discovered the bonobos? I think it has something to do with your going to the San Diego Zoo quite a few years ago.
Well, I honestly discovered them on television. This was in the days when, you know,
mm-hmm.
television was important, before the internet really was big. It was 1993, and I was watching a special on PBS called The Nature of Sex.
Mm-hmm.
And
uh-huh.
I was a happily sexed newlywed, as most newlyweds are having lots of great sex.
Mm-hmm.
But I did kind of wonder, how's this going to continue? You know, I know that usually I had a pattern of losing sexual interest after a couple of years with past boyfriends, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, so did my husband for that matter, and with girlfriends or wives, and it had happened to everyone I knew, and I just saw this special on the nature of sex, and it seemed to open up an escape hatch from the prison of monogamous monotony that I saw for everybody else I knew. So how did it do that? Well, I guess mainly because when I looked at those bonobos, I saw myself. I just thought, this looks just like me. I enjoyed all the other animals they showed in The Nature of Sex, from the zebras to the crocodiles to the fruit flies, all mating and sexually relating. It was all very inspiring to see nature in a sexual ecstasy. But seeing the bonobos was like looking into a funhouse mirror, seeing a side of myself that was very recognizable but different. And I went, who are these amazing hairy creatures that look like me and yet seem to be having this fantastic time, having lots of sex and also making peace? And I then went to the San Diego Zoo and started interacting with several bonobos that I have known over the years since then, especially Lana. And you can read about my kind of relationship with Lana in the book. There's a wonderful
group of bonobos there. And that's a fun relationship.
And
didn't she give you a kiss? You a kiss through the glass?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, that's a story in and of itself. I don't know how far we want to go into my kiss with Lana, but I will say it was through a glass barrier. So it was not exactly kissing her directly, but I was kissing her through the glass. And it was a beautiful thing. French kissing, so intimate. And bonobos do a lot of kissing like that, just like we do.
Yeah.
And they have sex face-to-face, just like we do.
And that's unusual. We did talk about that last month, and their anatomy is a little different than in some primates or other animals, for that matter, so that they can have, intercourse. And you said that they don't have a lot of intercourse, but when they do, they can be face-to-face. They can look into each other's eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, the female genitalia is rotated forward, so face-to-face is actually mm-hmm. a little more comfortable for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, they do it doggy style, too, like we do every once in a while, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, they love that eye contact. That's
yeah.
part of their intimacy and their empathy is looking into each other's eyes quite a bit, including during sex.
Mm-hmm. And that's just remarkable. Well, let's talk a little bit about the bonobo's lifestyle, including swinging. And for humans, there is a group called The Lifestyle. And you've been a speaker at The Lifestyle,
yes.
the national convention, and so have I.
One of my first talks on bonobos was at a Lifestyles convention.
Uh-huh. And
mm-hmm.
for me, I was talking about great sex after 40, and I had done a Playboy movie about that, too. So Playboy came and filmed me as I spoke to these swingers. And a lot of them are somewhere around 40, so they're interested. And
yes.
Bonobos
do swing from the trees as well as with each other. They are definitely swingers in many ways, and that is part of what helps them to make peace through pleasure. They are just very pansexual.
Mm-hmm.
And, in many ways, a bonobo banquet resembles a human swing party, although, you know, the humans tend to have the food in a separate area, and then
mm-hmm.
they have the swinging in, like,
yes,
a mattress
yes.
room. The bonobos kind of mix it up, and they eat while eating, you know.
Oh, what fun.
Well, they do have a lot of fun. And
yeah.
I don't, by the way, say that we should do it exactly like them. I think it's perfectly fine for humans to separate our food from our mattress room when we're having an orgy, you know, because it can get messy and not a great way.
Right.
And there's many, many other ways in which we should not exactly imitate bonobos, such as the fact that they have sex across all family lines. The only people that don't have sex are mother and son.
Everybody
else mixes
fascinating.
It up. We shouldn't do that.
We shouldn't do that.
And you know, we can't swing from trees with our feet either. We shouldn't do everything they do. But
mm-hmm.
what I'm saying is to be inspired by the freedom with which they express their sexuality and to try to liberate our inner bonobo and be a little more free, not necessarily with the whole community, although maybe it is a good idea to do a little experimenting with sex outside the bedroom.
You write in your book, and this is a funny sentence, the classic swing party looks a lot like a gathering of bonobos with less hair and more hairspray. That's very
yeah.
cute.
I'm laughing at my own jokes. But, yeah,
that's
part of being bonobo.
That's
is,
good.
Yeah,
and
enjoying life. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, you write, and this is on page 63 in your book, mm-hmm. That Dr. DeWall, am I pronouncing his name right?
DeWall.
Yeah, DeWall.
Ross DeWall.
And
one of the foremost bonobo experts in the world.
Yes. And he says he doesn't feel that the bonobo's free love would necessarily suit us.
Mm-hmm.
And you write back, do you remember what you said? With all due respect?
I think I said something to the effect of, well, yes, it does, Dr. DeWall, and you should come to one of my after parties to observe.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So tell people about your parties. They usually occur. You have a really huge space in downtown Los Angeles.
Well, actually, I'm not in downtown L.A. anymore. I am in an undisclosed location.
I see.
In
that
West
probably
Los
gives
Angeles.
It more security then.
Well, it's just a different place, and I got tired of downtown because it got too popular, and I wanted to be closer to the beach. And so we have a beautiful place now with a garden in the middle, the garden
of
Bonoboville. And yes, we have play spaces, and we do the show here, and we have a bar, and we have an erotic art gallery. We're building a little cafe here.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Bonoboville right here where we can make like bonobos, not baboons, together. And sometimes that involves sex, and sometimes it involves playing music and dancing and laughing, you know, love, lust, and laughter, all of it.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's how long it's been. I was down with Brian for the Quad S convention in Los Angeles, and I actually introduced you talking about bonobos. I was a moderator for that particular session. But then later we went, so that was 2012. And so you have moved probably, was it 2013, 2014, somewhere in there. But it's been 3 years since I've been down there.
Right. So now we're in West LA. And speaking of giving talks, I am going
to
be giving a talk on the Bonobo Way at CatalystCon, which is in a couple of weeks on Saturday, September 12th. If you're listening not live, I hope you sign up for Catalyst and join me.
And that's in CatalystCon.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right, Con?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
And, get your bonobo on at CatalystCon.
Yeah, good.
Anyway, so we have our own Bonoboville here, inspired by the Bonobo Way. And you can also join on the social media site, bonoboville.com.
Mm-hmm.
People have Bonobovilles all over the world, as I say in this second part of the book, which I should clarify, is these 12 steps. And it's not your typical 12-step program, of course. It's, in fact, anti-program to deprogram you from the other programs in a way.
Mm-hmm.
But it is about getting in touch with your bonobo nature and releasing it in some safe, sane way that is not going to get you put in another cage, you know, and, of course, consensual way, and then sharing this bonobo-esque energy with the world. And bonobo-esque energy is sexual, but it doesn't always have to be overtly sexual.
Yeah.
So one of the steps is to create your own Bonoboville or join a Bonoboville, a community of people who are bonobo-esque, who are sex positive, who can help you to release your inner bonobo, even if it's just a massage group or or a dancing group, something that takes you away from your unbonobo common chimp side and helps you to release your positive, sexual, peaceful feelings.
Exactly. And you write about some of the history of the Bonobovilles of the 60s and 70s and coming from the Key Club and the U.S. Air Force. Tell our listening audience about this. I had read about it before, but I think it's fascinating history about how
to swinging.
This started.
Swinging, which is, I mean, in a way, the word to me, because I'm so kind of into bonobos, it's just all about having an open attitude towards sexuality and being able to interact erotically with different people, not necessarily having full-on sexual intercourse with all those people. But the technical definition of swinging, I suppose, is a husband and wife, a committed couple who does share sex, which would include sexual intercourse if they're into what they call hard swinging, or maybe not if they're into soft swing, but they definitely interact erotically with other individuals and couples, often in parties, sometimes in individual get-togethers. And there's a very long history to this, and in fact, just as our mutual colleague and friend Dr. Chris Ryan writes in Sex at Dawn, something like this was probably happening among humans at the dawn of humanity. And after all, that's when we were more connected to bonobos, more closely related to our common ancestor. But and you know, there's something like this happening in ancient Rome and Tahiti and all kinds of places in the Age of Enlightenment in Paris. But it seems like the kind of swinging that we know today really had its burst or its start in the key clubs in America. In I guess they started in maybe the 40s when
World War II.
Airmen. Yes, had to go on these missions that were very dangerous, and they would kind of get together and share each other's wives, so to speak. In those days, it was a little sexist, but they called it wife swapping. And part of it was, yeah, because, of course, these guys and their wives would usually have high sex drives, very bonobo. They're, of course, doing something that isn't peace through pleasure. They're dropping bombs, yeah, that's very violent and wrong. But maybe they wanted to do something else very sexually positive to kind of counterbalance that in their lives. And they also kind of felt like, yeah, I could go any minute, and I want my wife to have someone else among my buddies who cares about her and maybe has had this sexual relationship with her, so that he will take care of her or can, you know, be with her when I go. And so they would have these get-togethers, and the idea was they would drop their keys into a bowl, and that it goes back and forth as to whether the wife would pick up the keys of another husband, or the husband would pick up the keys to another wife, or even whether this whole key swapping thing happened in this way. But they were called key clubs. And there's where the swapping and the swinging really got going in America.
And I think that's fascinating. You're right that it was the U.S. Air Force fighter pilots, because this was the job that had the highest fatality rate in the armed
and
forces.
And our mutual friend Dr. Bob McGinley is the one who told me that story originally. Way
is
back
that
then.
Right? Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I've read it somewhere else, too. It's
part
also
of in the book, The Swingers, it's called The Lifestyle. Terry Gould wrote it. And there's a chapter on my philosophy of ethical hedonism and quite a bit about bonobos, because that was when I first gave my lecture on the bonobo way, was when Terry Gould was there, and he thought that was, you know, the way of the future. And it's snowballing. There's a movement going now. And he taught me about sperm wars, which is a whole chapter in the book.
Yeah, we'll get into that a little bit, the sperm wars, because it's it's unique among the bonobos.
No, it's not unique among
it's
the bonobos,
not unique.
Dr. Diana. You're very, very good at your bonobo knowledge, but I have to correct you.
Wait
on
a minute,
that.
Hold on.
They
I live close to. I'm in downtown Seattle, and the fire engines go by.
I hear it. Wow.
No, it's not
it's a
unique.
Sperm war
I know.
In Seattle. Okay.
Yeah.
Make sperm wars, not real wars. That's my motto. Anyway.
Oh, I love it.
Well, you know, that's one of the reasons that bonobos do keep the peace, is because they keep the wars in their balls. And
oh,
in
good.
The female reproductive tract, that's where the war goes on.
Uh-huh.
And to some degree, that's true among humans and common chimps and a lot of species. It's even true among, I don't know, fruit flies or dung.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's dung flies. That's where they originally found sperm wars. Or guppies. Anyway, it's in a lot of different species.
Mm-hmm.
Guppies, yes. Otto Winge, I think, first discovered sperm wars. And basically, what it is in a coconut shell is this. Nuts. Okay, the puns are just unavoidable.
Oh, yeah, coconut
but,
shell.
But we used to think that all sperm was like runners, running a great marathon, and that every one of the sperm that a man ejaculated would be running towards the egg, and the fastest runner would win. And we since found out by looking at sperm under giant microscopes that no, they're not all runners. Some of them are killer sperm, and they actually emit enzymes that are toxic and that kill other sperm. Now, what sperm are they killing? Well, not the sperm within the load that they came in from the guy that shot them out. No, that wouldn't be very friendly. That would be friendly fire, I guess. No, they're trying to shoot sperm from another man's load. Mm-hmm. So there are also sperm that are defender sperm that have kind of blocker abilities so that they can protect the runners from other sperm that might be trying to attack them. So really, sperm are less like runners, marathon, than like a football team or an army. And they all have their different roles. And when a man shoots a load of semen, whether it's into a woman or into his hand, he's basically shooting a football team to do battle with another football team so that he can get his runners to the egg. But he's also using these other players. So if a man feels that, yeah, there's a lot of rivals on for this woman, his brain sends a message to his testicles that says, make more sperm. We have to combat this other team. If he feels that his woman, the woman he's about to have sex with, will never be with another man, that she's totally monogamous, and that she might be the most beautiful woman in the world, he might love her very much, but if he feels there are no other teams on the field, his brain sends a message to his testicles that says, conserve your sperm, because nature is conservative. You shouldn't be, you know, putting out a lot of energy that you don't need to put out. And if there aren't any other competitors, then you're going to have a lower erection and a little bit, you know, less of an ejaculate. This is why when a man feels that a woman is hot, that other men like her, that other men want her, whether they have sex with her or not, if he feels she could have sex with these other men, then his brain sends that message that says, yeah, make the full army. We need to be as strong as possible. And then he has a stronger erection and a more copious ejaculate than he would if he just feels, hey, there's nobody else for my woman but me.
It's all fascinating. It really is.
It's one of the reasons so many men love swinging and even cuckolding. You know, it's very, very powerful. And it's something that's very unspoken in our society because it's considered, you know, not so masculine to let your woman be with another man. And listen to my language I'm using here.
Let.
It's definitely a patriarchal imperative to try to keep the woman monogamous and to acknowledge that it's actually a turn-on for your woman to be with other men or women. Sometimes the sperm wars effect can happen even just looking at your woman with another woman or thinking about her that way. It doesn't actually have to happen. Some of these things are best left in the realm of fantasy. Or you can use a dildo, and you know, while you're using your dildo on your woman, you're thinking, wow, look at that, she's getting it from another guy. And I can almost guarantee it will get you more excited than not doing it.
I remember in Dr. Ryan's book, Sex at Dawn, he surmises that in these prehistoric communities that men would actually line up and wait their turn to have intercourse with one woman, and that it was such a turn on to see these other men having sex with the same woman.
Yeah, it's an interesting, compelling possibility that is how we used to have sex. And there's no absolute evidence, but there's a lot of contributing evidence, such as the fact that men can usually come quickly, and women usually need a lot more time. Now, why would God, the goddess, or nature make us this way? It just seems so unfair. And a lot of people just say, well, that's the battle of the sexes. You know, men want to get it in and out of there. Women want to keep you around for a while. It just doesn't quite make sense. But what Ryan posits and what does seem to be true in bonobo society is that, you know, a woman or a female will have sex with several males. And therefore, certainly by male number three, she's having an orgasm.
Yeah, that's right. And then Helen Fisher thinks from an anthropological point of view that men were designed to spread their seed, whereas a woman who would be pregnant and more vulnerable would need maybe more than one man to bring her food and to take and to protect her. And so thus women are more hardwired to be protected.
I guess that sort of is a little convoluted. I'm not sure how to respond to that one.
Well, that's right. Let's go back to bonobos. Although
I will say Helen Fisher has written some great things about bonobos, and bonobos certainly, nobody knows who the father is. Maybe that's part of what she's saying there, is that among bonobos and probably among early humans, before we discovered what happens in procreation and how one sperm fertilizes one egg, they didn't know that there was one father to any particular baby. And among bonobos, they probably don't either. I mean, you can assume the alpha male is the father of a lot of the babies in the community, but not all of them, and who knows which is which. And so all of the males are kind of like uncles. Now, it's a dicey situation because it's the same thing in common chimpville, but among common chimps, the males are very aggressive and will often kill the babies if they get angry. And so not knowing who the father is there doesn't help and maybe even hurts them. But among bonobos, not knowing who the father is kind of seems to make all the bonobo males into nice uncles.
You also write, I think that's fascinating,
and they
Dr.
never
Susie.
Kill the babies.
Yeah. You write about that bisexuality keeps the peace in Bonoboville.
Yes. Bisexuality is very important to keeping the peace in Bonoboville.
Yes, and you write that witnessing the fluid sexuality of bonobos helps the bi-inclined, as well as the transgender folks feel more at ease with their sexuality. Mm-hmm. And certainly Caitlyn Jenner has been in the news a lot.
Yes.
So, and the fluidity with their sexuality.
I would just like to say there's a lot of transgender people out there that need our support, too. One in point is Bradley Manning, that's terrible. But anyway, Miss Manning is incarcerated right now and would like to get some of the goodies that Caitlyn Jenner's been getting. So there's a lot of people that are in need of transgender help. Caitlyn Jenner is very fortunate that she had the money and the celebrity to come out in a very positive way.
But she's getting a lot of good information out about the transgender community. Are you familiar with Dr. Mark Schoen's film, Trans?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
He's with Quad S, and he's a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. And it's a very sensitive film that he made about 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And anyway.
And, of course, bonobos, you know, they don't have surgery, and they don't have, you know, they don't wear bras and panties. But they, I guess for want of a better word, are bisexual. It's not the best word to describe them. Pansexual might be better.
Pansexual.
And their Latin name is Pan Paniscus, from the Greek god Pan, who was a satyr and was very mischievous and sexual. And later the Christians turned him into the devil, actually, the horns and the tail.
I did not know that.
Pan is their kind of patron satyr, and they are very mischievous like Pan, and also they are very bisexual. In bisexuality, that is same sex relations along with so-called opposite sex relations, are really intrinsic to keeping the peace in Bonoboville. Let's talk first about sex between females. The females migrate from their original community of birth to another community when they reach puberty. And this is also true of common chimps. But among common chimps, when a female migrates, she's kind of treated like a lowly stranger and not invited to participate. She has to really struggle to get food and to get all the other goodies associated with being a member of the community, and basically has to appeal to the males with her sexuality. And the males, of course, among common chimps, are likely to beat her and harass her, and then the females will do nothing to help her. And there's the siren again.
Yeah, and I have no control over this. So.
I know. Sounds like somebody's in trouble. Oh, well. Anyway, among bonobos, when the female migrates, she's welcomed into the new community by the other females. And these other females will kind of invite her to observe them and maybe eat with them and certainly have a kind of sex with them. Mm-hmm. And she will literally suck up to the alpha female or an older female that she finds, you know, appealing and that finds her appealing. And then they will create a sexual political alliance that gets her some status in her new community. This is done through many things, but primarily through this sexual act that is called by the primatologist genital rubbing, that involves rubbing those big vulvas against each other to the point of orgasm often, or sometimes just a quick swish, just sort of what they call a bonobo handshake, something just establish some friendliness. But sometimes they'll do it in a tree to the point that they have orgasms and fall out of a tree. In fact, the orgasms from female-female sex are said to be somewhat more profound than the orgasms that females have with males, although maybe that's debatable. But in any case, having these orgasms together and eating together and doing things together makes the bonobo female stick together, so that if a bonobo male is bold and stupid enough to get out of line and try to attack a female, her friends will gang up on him, will protect her, will help her. And even though the males are bigger and stronger than the females and have fangs and could hurt or kill the females if they wanted to, because the females bond like this, they prevent that. They keep the males in line. And as I said, they rule gently but firmly, keeping the males gentle but firm. Because
gentle
they will stop
firm.
The male and maybe smack him around. Bonobos aren't peaceful, but they're not completely nonviolent. They will use some biting and punching, you know, to get their point across. But they don't kill, unlike common chimps or humans. And so the females might gang up on the male and beat him up, and then they might, you know, say, okay, well, we'll give you a blowjob anyway. So we'll set it up. So.
Once again, peace through pleasure.
Peace through pleasure.
So it's almost like the females provide a united front, and that these younger females that have migrated then acquire an older female mentor, a sexual mentor.
Yes. They do.
They acquire
an older female sexual mentor. And this is part of what I feel is the bonobo way among humans. I think this is happening more and more among us.
Yes.
It used to be that women would never talk about sex between each other. And now we're talking a lot about it.
Yes.
And older females are definitely mentoring younger females, both intellectually and hands-on. So bonobo males are also bisexual, and, you know, I could go into a whole description of that, which often, I guess, the basic description would be they will fight, and then something happens. Maybe one decides to submit, or a female encourages them to make peace, or they do what's called penis fencing.
Yep, you write about that penis
or they
fencing.
Do rump rubbing or, you know, something sexual in order to take that violent energy and channel it into a kind of sex with each other, and it does not descend into killing ever so far.
Well,
I don't know
this
if
is absolutely fascinating,
you know,
and there's so
Obama,
much here.
You know, penis fence with Putin, but it does seem that some level of pleasure exchange might help our peace process as well.
Absolutely, and we're going to have to end the program in a couple of minutes, so I just want to say you and I off the air will definitely plan a part three.
All right.
And we'll announce ahead of time that people can call in once I've confirmed with PRN that they've got somebody live to pick up the phones, because in New York, where this program originates,
because we still have to talk about 50 Shades of Bonobo, you know.
Oh, yeah,
Bonobo,
that's right.
BDSM.
Next time we'll do that. Part three,
and
50 Shades of Bonobo.
Bonobo
their
style
their
and
ways
why
of BDSM.
Although Sperm Wars theory tells you a little bit about why men
a little
love
bit,
sluts.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't get to BDSM. Yeah.
We will.
And Sperm Wars does tell you a little bit about it, but... yeah, there are just so many things. I'm so glad you wrote this book, Dr.
Thank
Susie.
Thank you for promoting it.
Well, you're welcome. It's a pleasure. I started to say at the top of the show, I really like media work, the 5 years in Hawaii and then 5 years now with Progressive Radio Network, because it is an excellent way to get out good, solid information. And so many people need more information about sexuality. And then they can also get leads to read fascinating books.
Absolutely.
Like yours.
And by the way, if anyone out there isn't a reader or needs to talk privately and just wants to talk about how to release their own inner bonobo, they can call me at 310-568-0066 and perhaps become a client of my institute.
Good. And 310, should I put that in the summary?
0066.
Yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's been a really fascinating show, and I'm so grateful that you returned to the program. And
I love to talk to a wonderful bonobo-esque lady like you. Very sapiosexual, too.
Thank you. I think that when one is fully in touch with one's sexuality and can express it joyfully and easily, it's such a blessing, because for so many people there's so much shame around their sexuality and guilt. And I'm not hearing the music, that's why I'm continuing to talk.
There it is.
There we go.
All right.
Thank
the
you, Dr.
Bonobo way.
Susie.
Once again, part two. Part three is coming.
Part three is coming, and I'll be in touch with you. Thank you again. Wonderful.
My pleasure.
Wonderful hour with you.